Powered by Rev Media in partnership with TSN, Season 5, Episode 65. It is a playoff edition of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by your title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey. Have you tried the Canadian Club Ginger Ale? It's a crisp, refreshing alternative to beer. Well-balanced flavors of ginger ale, subtle notes of rye and spice. The new formula, 30% less sugar, 20% fewer calories. It is absolutely delicious. That is the Canadian Club Ginger Ale. Try it today. Lots going on, Ray. And, man, we're going to get to the meat of some of the games that were played on Wednesday night, the opener of Vancouver and Edmonton. So many layers to that one. The battle, and I choose that word appropriately, the battle that was between Florida and Boston, which got darn right snarly in that one and evening that series. But headlines, we've got to start headlines with the firing of Sheldon Keefe as head coach of the Toronto Maple Leafs. And our headlines are brought to us by Tim Hortons. Prepared fresh to order, new oven baked flatbread pizzas. Delicious lunch and dinner option at your local Tim's with incredible value for your money, starting at just $6.99. Choose from bacon everything, Ray's personal favorite, chicken parm. Ooh, what about pepperoni? Simply cheese. Flatbread pizzas available now at Tim Hortons. All right. So general manager Brad Treliving allowed the dust to settle, Ray, for a few days, right? Post game 7 on Saturday night. He was upset. Nah, he was more than that. I mean, most general managers, most people involved in hockey ops, they're just pissed, right? Eliminated from the Stanley Cup playoffs yet again. So he takes some time so he can make what's described as an unemotional decision, and that's firing Sheldon Keefe. Are you in the camp that change needed to be made, given the fact that the Maple Leafs, under the leadership, the guidance of the last number of years, 6 years, have not made it through the second round? One time only into the second round of the playoffs. Is Sheldon at least in part responsible for that? And you embrace this idea of change?
Well, I do, but I think it's naive to think that there's not many parts to a change that happens like this. That of course he was part of the last 6 years. He was part of some of the successes. He was part of some of the failures. We, on the last podcast, talked about the challenges if they want to change the roster contractually. This is one hell of a lot easier. And if you want change, and their change is clearly needed, like they can talk themselves round and round and round and round there, and they can try and thread the needle about why they should keep the four players together and that the roster in general should stay the same. But the fact of the matter is it's been not once, but 5 or 6 or 7 times that this collection hasn't worked. And Sheldon's been there for a while. I think he's shown, if you look at from a higher place, and look down at it, he's clearly shown growth as an NHL coach. I don't think there's any question. I thought he coached an excellent series against Boston, but they lost again. Mm-hmm. And it seems like to almost any rational person that they've got to go down a different path. And the coach can change the methods. He can change the way he goes about it, but it's still the same coach. And so eventually there's the old line, you run out of racetrack. And that's where they are. I mean, this should be, it's 10 years Brendan Shanahan's been in charge. It's Kyle Dubas, it's Lou Lamoriello, then it's Brad Treliving, then it was Mike Babcock, now it's Sheldon Keefe. Like, eventually, they're going to run out of road.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you only get so much time, and then the ideas either work or they don't. And at some point, you've got to find a new path.
Mm, agreed. So, you did reference the fact that you saw growth in Sheldon Keefe as an NHL head coach. And more often than not, Ray, you see first-time NHL coaches, okay, they go through, the growing pains, they get fired, and then their second job, they're much different, much better, much more confident coach. And that, I believe that's going to happen with Sheldon. I think he's an excellent NHL coach. So take us between the benches. You've done so many Toronto Maple Leaf games, right? What was Sheldon Keefe like there? Interactions with players, maybe bench management, et cetera.
This is where in my, because you don't see the everyday stuff, right? You don't see the practices, no. You don't see the meetings. So my evaluation is just watching him coach. And even as late, as deep into the season, there's a game in Florida. It was one of those last ones where, you know, the Leafs, they got shelled in Florida. I forget.
Yeah.
The second period, they got outshot like 28-3 or something or other.
It was a wide margin. I remember that.
And they took a bunch of penalties, and he's complaining to the officials almost every call. And then like a week later, that was like a bad night. It was one of those nights where, and we've all had them. And the problem is when you're a pro athlete or coach, they're out for everybody to see. When we have a bad night, we see it, or our family see it, or whatever it is. And the growth I saw is that he became less emotional behind the bench, more strategic. When he made his point, it was quicker and shorter to the officials. I saw more and more as time went on, going down and talking to a player, like delivering a message directly to the player instead of delivering it to the bench. And like Scotty Bowman was famous for, if he was really pissed at, I don't know, pick a player. If he was really pissed at, I don't know, Luke
Darren
Robitaille.
McCarty.
Darren McCarty. There's a good one.
Yeah.
He would walk behind Darren McCarty and say to the assistant coach, not to McCarty, what am I going to do with McCarty? What am I going to do? I can't play him. He's no good. He's no good. And then he'd walk away, and McCarty would be hearing this.
Oh, yeah.
And the only thing he wants to do is either kill Scotty or go have a great shift.
Yeah.
And that was Scotty's way. It was always a little bit off center. And so, you know, and he'd be, what am I going to do? Can't play him. Can't use him. And then he'd walk away, and the guy would be furious, and he'd play. So today's player, you got to be, I think you've got to, I think the player wants the direct message in most cases. So I saw that. I also saw when things didn't go well, he would look for a different solution behind the bench, more of a gut feel. And a coach has to be able to do that, because you don't get time to strategize all the time. You look and you go, that guy's playing well, that guy's playing well, let's put them out there together. The last thing is, for years they've tried to get the Leafs to play a more strategic defensive game. And had their big guy scored a goal or two, it probably would have worked.
Sure.
And they lost series because they couldn't defend and they weren't scoring. Then they got it down to they couldn't score. Like, they were getting there.
Yeah.
But again, the track runs out and you run into the wall. That's it.
So we'll talk about potential replacements in just a moment. But is there a difference in how players respond to news like this? Yeah, there would be, right? When a firing happens in season, well, now you're dealing with the new guy immediately. Like, there's no time to adjust. You're going to adjust because you're being told to adjust. Well, now when it happens this early in the off season, whomever Brad Treliving brings in as a replacement for Sheldon Keefe, okay, there's a get-to-know-you period and maybe more of a niceness to that period, because you're not preparing for a game. What you're preparing for is your off-season training and then training camp and then the preseason and then 24-25.
Well, whoever the new coach is will reach out and have conversation. In some cases, they go to the players individually and talk to the key guys and try and start building a relationship. They've got the time to do it. Some guys will be really disappointed. Some guys will not be disappointed at all. And that goes back to the old coaching axiom of the 10 guys that like you in the room, they're going to really like you. And your job is to keep the 5 guys that don't know whether they like you or not away from the 5 guys that hate you. And so it doesn't spread. So there's going to be all kinds of reaction. Guaranteed you'll hear from the players like, we've got to bear some of the responsibility here. And you sure as hell do. I've got this thought about, you know why coaches walk back and forth behind the bench is because they're looking for new players.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, oh my God, I got the same guys. And your whole livelihood is dependent on the 18 guys sitting in front of you.
Yeah.
And you can only do so much. and you have to hope that the buttons you push are the right ones. And almost every coach, I really don't know of any, haven't been fired.
Yeah.
Because eventually the idea that you have or the ideas you have don't work in the place you're in, and you move on.
Yeah.
Or the team moves on from you is really what happens.
Well, again, we'll talk in just a second here about the potential replacements. But
if I'm Toronto, this is step one of several steps.
Agreed. Yeah. And I think it has to be because, look, whether it's Brad Treliving or any general manager, you know this, they hate firing coaches because what it does is take one more possibility out of your arsenal. Right.
Yeah.
Like, you can only play the firing coach card so many times before you become the object of scrutiny in the eyes of ownership. So I don't know that Tree would feel that immediately. I mean, in this case, he had a free year with Sheldon. Yeah, Sheldon's going into the 2-year contract extension, but that's where I was going to go specific to Sheldon. You've seen, you've heard, you've read all the speculation of, oh, geez, could Mike Sullivan lead the Pittsburgh Penguins and could he join his buddy Tom Fitzgerald in New Jersey? Well, guess what's going to percolate now? You know, is there some way of allowing, making that possibility real? Sully goes to New Jersey, and that opens the door for Sheldon Keefe to rejoin Kyle Dubas in Pittsburgh. I mean, none of this is all just wild sort of social media fodder, but if you're in the business of trying to connect the dots, you can at least see how the dots align in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, I always wonder about this sort of thing because it's so rare, right? Like that a coach under contract would be allowed to leave. There's got to be some kind of compensation, however that works.
And you can't do that anymore, though. You can't compensate. No. Commissioner Bettman allowed it for a bit, but then he knew it was going to turn into just a mess, right? Because
yes. Well, I was just going to say,
yeah, there's how too would much you back know? Channeling.
Yeah, how exactly. Would you know? You know, you might give somebody 3 rocks. You publicly say it's $3 million and you give them 3 rocks on your beach place or something.
Yeah.
I did not know that. So really, if Sullivan, if that were to happen, he would just be allowed to go?
I guess.
I mean, I don't know.
I checked in on this specific to Dubas and Sully because there's been that threat out there that, you know, maybe there's a rift between coach and general manager. And, you know, all I get back is, no, things are great between coach and GM in Pittsburgh. But anyway, it's just too salacious to dismiss until one of those guys on record says it's not happening.
You know what's really interesting about this? And again, I hate the speculation stuff. I really do.
No,
but
yeah.
It's kind of fun to talk about, and we got time. So, is that Sullivan signed an extension with ownership. And I believe it was a 5-year extension. And then Dubas got hired and signed a 7-year contract.
Yeah.
From ownership. And Dubas did not sign the coach to the 5-year extension.
No.
And so I'm like, ooh, you could see
that'd
where
be big
gears-
money too. Like Sully's making middle of the road cash.
No, and so you can see where the gears would get kind of jammed up there is each guy thinks they've got the inside ear with ownership. Mm. And it's hard because part of Dubas's job is to coach or manage the present, but they got to build their future there.
Yeah.
And Sully's job is, same as every coach, is not the future. It's the now.
Right.
And you can see where that would be. Conflict could possibly arise, and maybe it is, and maybe it isn't. But now Travis Green's gone from Jersey. Jersey does not have a coach.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, this coaching thing's really stable, isn't it? Wild, jeez, man.
Yeah, I'm actually a bit surprised, and it's why it's kind of what fuels me as an insider, and it's really the basis as to why I brought it up. All of the possibilities around Dubas and Sullivan and New Jersey, and now you throw Craig Berube into the mix. You know, with all the speculation around Toronto and what they were inevitably going to do with Sheldon Keefe, you would think that if New Jersey saw Craig Berube as option A, Fitzy would have pounced, right? He would have made an offer. I mean, Craig Berube lives like 30 minutes from, you know, the arena in Newark. Like from a family perspective.
Okay. So I'm going to throw this out. So you're chief. You're sitting there. You're sitting on the TNT panel.
Yeah.
You, because you're not a dummy, you know that you're the top candidate in probably four or five markets.
Yeah.
Anytime in a, unless it's San Jose, who's probably looking for more of a development guy, you're probably a name that's going to get discussed in any of these places looking for a coach. And so New Jersey comes to you. I'm just doing a supposition here. They come to you and they say, hey, we'd like to talk to you. And you're like, if Toronto loses, maybe they'll make a change there. Why don't we just wait?
Yeah.
Very rarely is a coach in a position, an unemployed coach, in a position to say, let's just wait. And if there has been someone that could, it would be Chief right now. Because A, there's lots of jobs that are available right now, and B, the jobs are of significance.
Mm. Well, I mean, not to put words in Craig Berube's mouth, like so many up-and-coming coaches, and he's not that. He's a proven winner.
Yep.
You know, Stanley Cup champion with St. Louis. Man, that Toronto Maple Leafs bench is always coveted. And I would think that given a choice, that would be his first option. I have no doubt. I know Brad Treliving's already. You know, we're recording this episode 11:30 Eastern Thursday morning, and he's in it, right? Like he, whether it's Berube or it's Todd or it's Gallant or it's someone that we haven't even speculated on. Mm. You know, there's no rush per se, but there is a want to fill that vacancy as soon as possible. Do you have is there an option A for you there? Or doesn't matter to you, but is there an option A?
In Toronto?
Yeah.
Oh, I would say the two guys I would have at the top of my list would be McClellan and Berube.
Yeah.
And they're both, in my opinion, the type of coaches that will excel or have their best stuff with a team that is further down the road.
Mm-hmm.
They're past the days of being the guy to build the group, which Todd did in San Jose. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, when Chief did in his first job in Philadelphia. And so like the other part to this too. So you mentioned those three, Gallant, who would still like to coach, McClellan, Berube. There's Dean Evason.
Yeah.
There's a whole flock of assistant coaches that want to get their names into that next suit.
Absolutely.
It is, at the end of the day, there's 32 benches. And, you know, you can say, oh, I only want to coach here or I only want to coach there. There's not many people that get to have that kind of say-so.
Well, that'll be the next phase of our storytelling here on the podcast is, you know, who replaces Sheldon Keefe. So look forward to that. We'll get to Vancouver Edmonton in just a moment. But man, it got real spicy, didn't it? Between the Boston Bruins and the Florida Panthers. I mean, game two was a gong show. And who cares what the score was? I mean, Florida won that game handily, 6-1 to even the series. You know, there wasn't much I didn't enjoy about this game. I'm not going to lie. And it had more to do with this has the makings of what's going to happen next written all over it, right? The mayhem, everything that went into it. What I didn't expect, even though I watched David Pastrnak and Matthew Tkachuk as they spun off having conversation with the officials, jaw each other, get back to their respective benches, I did not expect them to come out soon after that and drop the mitts. And then you see, you know, the quick interaction between Jim Montgomery, the head coach of the Bruins, and his star forward, Pastrnak, where clearly Pastrnak was looking for the green light. Are you okay if I do this? Because I want to do this. And Monty gave him thumbs up. I understand his position because moving forward in this series, I don't care what Boston Bruins player you are, you better play hard. You better block shots. You better do everything. Because if David Pastrnak breaks a hand or gets his face caved in by Matthew Tkachuk in that fight, maybe the green light by the head coach wasn't so smart. Is that just part of the passion of of a playoff game, right? Is that just part of it?
Well, I guess so. However, if you watch that fight, the one punch Tkachuk throws clearly hits Pasternak dead center because his helmet goes flying. It hit him right in the visor. There's only one way a helmet pops off, and that's if you get hit like on the eject button, which is right here. Like, and if you're not watching, it's like right in front of your nose.
In the beak.
I get, and everybody applauding Pasternak's desire and game, you know, like his gut to go do that. Man, if he gets hurt there, their season is over.
Yeah.
And in that fight, there is zero chance, well, not zero, but whatever's next door to zero, that Tkachuk's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
Because he knows a little bit more about what he's doing. Cool. And Pasta doesn't do that. But that game got out of hand. I was explaining to Riley, he's our 17-year-old. Of course, he never saw me play.
Yeah.
And I was saying, okay, Rye, this is exactly what the games used to be like when the score spread out. So I always thought when the game was 5-1 that I hoped whoever had won would make the game a little closer in that moment, because I'm like, you could smell it. Like, here comes the chaos right down the street. It's like the scrums, instead of being everybody standing around chirping each other, now they're like poke, poke, smack, smack.
Oh, yeah.
And the ref would go stop it, and then it wouldn't stop, and then you'd be like, and I'm the smallest guy on the ice, and I'm like, I know somebody's thinking, if this breaks out, I'm going to grab that little bugger, and I am going to pound him. So I hated those games. I hated them. But you could see, like, and back then, there was only one ref. Like, what the hell was he going to do? Right? At least they have more people around there to try and, but this, the one thing about Boston, they've got to guard against is you want to play as tough as you can, but Florida's tougher. Florida's bigger.
Yeah.
Florida has more guys that can play that way. So you can't be what you're not. And so Boston does have to compete, and they do have to play hard, and they do have to block shots, but they still have to be Boston.
Yeah.
That's the team they've built. They don't have Cam Neely's not coming out of the suite and, you know, and lining up.
Although he probably wanted to last night.
He's got a new shoulder and a couple of knees and a hip, and it ain't going to happen for him. So, but man, oh man, when that thing spread out and Montour celebrates in front of the net there on the shorty, when he scored the shorty, you're like, oh boy, that's not going to go over well.
But as you're describing Cam Neely, somebody reached out to me, and we talked about Craig Berube, top candidate to replace Sheldon Keefe. How about this one earlier this week? Buddy of mine calls and goes, yeah, I just watched something I never thought I would ever see in my lifetime. Craig Berube and Paul Holmgren playing pickleball for 2 hours.
That poor ball. Can you?
I laughed out loud. I always text both those men to say, I mean, because I remember back in the day, those guys would play basketball 20, 25 years ago, but inevitably it would end up in something. Like, there'd be a wrestling match. Somebody'd get
slapped.
Could
you imagine?
I mean, there were,
you know, there's street rules. Could you imagine what those two guys playing basketball would
like?
But seeing those two giants on a pickleball court would be hilarious.
For 2 hours. Like, I mean, credit to them for trying to stay in shape. I mean,
right.
Good Lord. All right. Vancouver, Edmonton, opener of the series. You know, Edmonton's got this thing wrapped up. 4-1 second period lead for the Oil. Canucks score four straight to stun Edmonton, the series opener. I don't know how you unwrap this thing as quickly as we should, but start at the beginning of where it started to unravel. What happened?
Well, it's kind of interesting that it happened really fast, in that it was 2-1. Vancouver gets a chance. Lafferty shoots it. It's kind of like a 3-on-2. The puck gets deflected.
Yeah.
Skinner makes the save. It hits Cody Ceci and almost goes in. So it's almost 2-2. Same shift. The puck goes down the ice. Ceci takes a slap shot. It hits Cole. It's 3-1. You're like, oh, what a kick in the pants. Next shift, Hyman scores off of Myers. It's 4-1.
Yeah.
Game's over. Like, it happened in 2 minutes. It was like it was over. Yeah. And then they got that second goal, Vancouver did. And then, you know, we're sitting here at home, and because I just got home, so I didn't go. I was at home with the kids, and I'm like, if they can get one in the next 10 minutes,
mm-hmm.
then you got a race, right? Then and then Miller scores, and then, you know, the big and small of it, you know, Zadorov and Garland score, and it's just gone. So you can unpack this 100 ways. Edmonton had 15 shots. The one thing that Vancouver can do is they've got huge D and they defend.
Mm-hmm.
That was not a goaltending clinic at either end of the ice.
No.
The difference is if Vancouver decided to go to Casey DeSmith in game two, that would be a possibility because, you know, between Shelovs and DeSmith, that would be, you could go back and forth. It's Stuart Skinner or bust at the other end. And he was not good. Like the Zadorov shot, he probably would like back. It hit him in the pad and went under his glove. The Garland goal, of course, he would like back. Mm-hmm. You know, he made a mistake on the, he played the puck outside the trapezoid. Like the game got away from him a little bit. But here's the thing. That's the game's over. They all got to take a breath. The series isn't won or lost. Edmonton lost a game on the road. Big deal. Vancouver won a game at home. Big deal. I mean, it is a big deal, but now you got to go towards Friday. And McDavid didn't have a shot. Like if Vancouver can hold McDavid without a shot, they're probably going to win. They're going to win, you know, like chances are he's going to get some shots.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Like the challenge will be greater for Vancouver. They'll tell you they liked a lot of their game. Three of the goals went in, probably shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And so each team can debate back and forth. And it was a wild night. The arena was wild.
Seemed like it. Yeah.
You know, Cammy called on the way home and like there was horns honking all over the place down there. Like it was a big deal. It's been a long time since there's been much to cheer about in Vancouver. And now they got one game in their pocket.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to Friday, man. There's just some intriguing matchups and the emotion that you get here in round two.
One thing I will throw terrific. To end on this is I just saw Pyotr Kochetkov is going to start game three for Carolina. Mm. And not surprising to me.
No.
But anyway, Rod Brind'Amour makes a change and goes to the young guy in goal.
Yeah, and how much of that, though, is on Freddie, right? Or is that just, I mean, he's part of it, right? I mean, as the last line of defense, you need your goaltender to, if not steal a game, make the saves that you absolutely have to make, and then a handful that you probably shouldn't make. So,
yeah, I thought, a little, I mean, Anderson, one of Anderson's problems is, two things. One is he's got the reputation of a bad goal at an inopportune time. And in game one, Panarin beat him with a 35-foot wrist shot that turned out to be the game winner. The other thing is, when the puck's in his feet, he's not an agile guy.
Mm-hmm.
And so pucks in his feet, but those become a problem.
Yeah.
Kreider tying goal was a puck in his feet that he couldn't get control of. He slams it in. And the Trocheck goal was a broken play. And I understand that, but it was right by his feet. And those are problematic for him. So the things that you would be concerned about reared their head in games one and two. And so you got to change something. And the other thing would be, you know, they got outscored 4-0 on the power play.
Yeah.
And in the first two games. And so that if that's going to happen, the Rangers are going to win.
Yeah.
Introducing Tim's new flatbread pizza. Freshly prepared and served hot out of the oven. Available in chicken parmesan, pepperoni, bacon everything, and simply cheese. There's a new Tim's run in town. New flatbread pizza. Try one today.
Lots going on.
Oh, it's the best.
Fun time of year.
And this is supposed to be the slow round, round two.
It's supposed to be. It's not working out that way for
not
you,
yet,
Ryan. Although you're, you know, as we wrap up the Tim Hortons headlines, are you playing any golf? You've got a day or two of reprieve here before you get back into the South.
I don't know if you can see behind me there. It's a pretty spectacular day. So,
yeah,
of course, terrible timing. They're aerating our course, but the range is open. I will be at the range later today and working on the whatever swing I have at this moment. And home till Sunday, and then depending what happens with the Rangers in Carolina, back for game five there on Monday.
Excellent. All right, buddy. Well, thanks for adjusting your schedule. I know it's tough at home. You're trying to get everything going with the kids and everything else, but we had breaking news that we had to attend.
Well, get down there, cover it up, and then you'll have to, I guess you got Friday, you got another press conference.
Yeah, it's Leafs all day, every day.
Are they gonna stretch something out till Saturday? Can they do something Saturday?
Well, let's hope so, Ray, because otherwise we're going to shut down things here.
There you go.
Well, have a good weekend. Thanks for listening, everybody.
All right, and thank you to our sponsors as we continue to support Ray and Dregs and make the pod possible. Our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.